Welcome to the U-Turn Podcast. This is the place to connect to who you truly are. We're bringing PhDs, experts, and leaders to help you elevate your mindset in your work life and in your love life so that you can see things differently and truly love your world. I'm Ashley Stahl. I'm a career expert, author, and TEDx speechwriter and booker, and I'm excited to bring you in to this week's episode. Okay, U-Turn friends, it's Ash here, and I'm really excited to bring a new friend onto the show, and it's Tucker Stein. He is what we call a brand architect, and he helps people synthesize their brand platform, whether it's marketing, communication, speaker development, storytelling. Whether you're in corporate or you're an entrepreneur, you know, cats out of the bag, we need to have a brand. Like, people's dogs have brands. People's stuffed animals have social media handles, so not even real animals. It's time for us to figure out how can we create a brand? How can we position ourselves in the market so that we can get more impact in our career? And I feel like Tucker is the guy to talk to about this. So Tucker, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I want to ask you about your history for everyone, because I feel like these nebulous terms like marketing and storytelling, it's like they move around, but I feel like you're really a whiz at what you do and you're different. So talk to me a little bit for everyone, just to give some context on what is your experience and what brings you to the work you're doing now, and what is that?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Gosh, yeah. So my career goes about 25 years back. I was that guy in college that was following everyone's expectations to go to business school. But in my mind, it was toying with, I really want to be more creative on the business side. So I had this internal wrestle with myself, an internal civil war, and I netted out on advertising, marketing, communications, because I could do the creative and the business at the same time. Which naturally, while all of my roommates and friends were going down to Wall Street, I'm like, I'm going to go into the ad business. So ended up at an advertising agency. I was with advertising agencies for years and years and years between Boston, San Francisco, and San Diego. And I loved it. And actually, in fact, my first client ever, and I always tell the story because it really is kind of the birth of my own passion for branding, was Sam Adams Beer. And I got to hang out with Jim Cook, the founder. And it was at the time when craft brew really didn't exist. Smaller breweries were starting to pop up, but they couldn't figure out what a good business or revenue stream looked like. It was at the time when Jim was trying to compete with Budweiser and Coors, and thinking and realizing, hey, you know what? Our market for Budweiser and Coors is not the same market for Sam Adams, and kind of creating an upper echelon of beer. And I was really excited because we used storytelling, branding, and all sorts of really cool customer case stories to develop the craft brew movement. And that kind of became this big thing coming out of Boston. And I'll never forget those days. And I realized then and there, I'm like, okay, this is why I really wanted to focus on branding, really focusing in on how stories can build businesses. And from there, I worked in a bunch of different ad agencies. And then I hit the proverbial, I like to call it a midlife awakening, Ashley. It was not a midlife crisis, but I turned 40 and realized that I was in a career where it was high risk, low reward. I had hit a ceiling. I wasn't enjoying it anymore. But one thing I really, really loved doing on the side was helping develop TEDx programs. And I had helped with one of the founding members of TEDx San Diego, fell in love with it. And I realized why I loved it so much was it was branding people and their ideas, and ideas that were actually changing the world and making an impact on the world, mm-hmm. versus beer and insurance or, you know, packaged goods. There's a time and a place for that, but my place had worn out there. And so around the age of 40-ish, about almost 10 years ago, I just decided to go become an entrepreneur, mistakenly. Didn't think it was actually going to stick, but it ended up sticking. And now I spend my days helping entrepreneurs, businesses, use their stories to build more purposeful business. And whether it's through public speaking, whether it's through, you know, messaging development, websites, all sorts of things. But I just love helping people create experiences with their customers versus selling products. And at the end of the day, that's what I'm doing today. And that's kind of how we ended up connecting through a mutual friend.
Yeah, it's so cool to hear you talk about it. And I actually, fun fact, I don't think I told you this, but I started my career in counterterrorism. But before, when I finished graduate school in London in war studies, I ended up moving back to Los Angeles, and I got my first job just to pay the bills while I was applying to be in the government. at Omnicom Group. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was in the same office as Shiat Day in Los Angeles. And there was something that I noticed, and I think a lot of people relate to this, is like a lot of people there, especially me, no matter what they're really doing, they feel like a cog in the wheel. And then there's the ones that are truly creating, that truly have the opportunity to be creative. And I feel like millennial generation, we grew up with the belief like pay your dues and then you'll get that moment. But I'm finding that some people just don't get that moment. They're not in the right building. They're not with the right people. It sounds like you actually got the opportunity to truly be creative, meet the people that were at the forefront of the influence and create a movement.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who's listening, I feel like if you're not somewhere that cultivates that for you, you get to decide if you're going to stay there or not. But Tucker, I feel like you have a process, and I know that we can't do it in 30 to 40 minutes, but anything we could give people listening to kind of start to think like you do around how to position themselves in the market. Take me, for example. I was talking to you about this last time we caught up. I started as a career coach, even though I never felt like a coach. You know, I was more of a consultant because I feel like consultants advise people and coaches just ask questions, which not to minimize that, questions are good. I'm more of an advisor sort. So I guess I'm more of like a coach consultant, you know, but I started off with that. And then I created online courses around job hunting. Then I evolved. And then I created online courses about fulfillment. And then I got a book deal. And it was all about fulfillment and figuring out your career. Now I'm writing TED Talks for executives. It's who we are moves so much. I feel like most people listening, whether they've made multiple career pivots or they've evolved in their business, they're probably wondering, like, how do I encapsulate who the heck I am? Like, how do I put this in the market? So what is your process to even start reflecting on that? Because, you know, I know that term slash careers that was developed in, I think, the 80s. Like, I have where it's I'm this slash that, like podcast host slash author slash I'm slash. So anyway, how does somebody begin to kind of think, how do I talk about myself? How do I tell people what I am?
Great question. And here's, I did a keynote a while back, and what I ended up doing, getting a little bit of the punchline away, but I think it's a good representation. I put a slide up and there was person A and person B. And on person A, it was just a list of where they went to school, how much business experience they had, what their degrees were in, what companies they worked for, other roles, responsibilities, all of that stuff. And then the right side was the person that focused on marriage and family and did volunteer service hours and participated as being a coach in Little League and soccer, all that kind of stuff. And I asked people, which person would you rather sit down and have coffee with? 9 times out of 10, they're going to pick person B because it sounded a lot more interesting and a lot more relatable. And then what I end up telling them is, well, surprise, is the same person. And at the end of the day, we are so focused when we think about brand and we think about the way we talk about ourselves on image and label and status and role and responsibility that we forget as humans, we buy an emotion first and justify with logic second. And we completely have the equation flip-flopped because we think the logic is going to drive connection and drive loyalty. And at the end of the day, it's a reinforcement, but what really drives is the experience that we have with one another. So I always say when we say go down to the basics, strip away all of the business acumen that you associate yourself with first. And at the end of the day, what lights you up? And I said, one of the things that I do is so the next time you go to a cocktail party, because what's the first thing you ask a person when you go to a cocktail party? Hey, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you change the question and say, hey, when you get up in the morning, what lights you up? And within 30 seconds, you're going to know more about that person than anybody else in the room. And you're going to be much more connected and trust that person way more in 30 seconds than you would a 5-minute conversation on business.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it's really, what are those kinds of experiences that are starting to align with you that actually make you happy and are driving that creative process and making you, you know, think differently? So rather than just saying, okay, you've been in advertising, I'll take me for example, for 20 plus years, what are the elements that you absolutely love? And what are the elements that you absolutely hate? Because we've been conditioned that if you get a degree in something or you've been in the same kind of industry vertical for years and years and years, you're destined to be a part of that for the rest of your life. The truth is, we all, you and I both know that it doesn't mean that.
Right.
So if you can take what you love about what you do and what you hate about what you do and start to think about, okay, now if I remove myself from the equation, and put it into service-related industries, or what can I be doing to give back to others, you start to really kind of formulate this different view and perspective of yourself. That's where I always start and kind of strip away some of the typical business career-like stuff and focus more on the humanity of business.
Love that.
That actually drives more success, productivity, proficiency, all the P's you want, profitability, whatever you want, all the P's down the road. That is where purpose and passion become the birthplace for much, much bigger things. And I've worked with people that have been literally like CEOs, whatever it is, and they're like, I'm absolutely miserable. And if I actually go back and look at what I love versus what I hate, I can redefine a career path.
I love this so much. And it also, I have so many questions about it because I feel like when I was working in national security, for example, or anyone who's in the workforce listening, it's such a fine balance, right? There's the human element where if you're interviewing for a job, showing the recruiter you're a human can sometimes take you so much further than you being like another robot with a great resume. But then they also want to know that you create results and you are qualified and da-da-da. So it's like balancing this human connection element with like results. So for me, at a networking event, and I hate to admit this, but when I created my email list, like however long ago, Tucker, like I would go to these groups. And if I led with the fact that I am the mother of a wolf dog, like he's 100 pounds of wolf, and I help people write their stories, and I worked in national security, it still feels like I can't just lead with my soul, because it's still this like masculine business game of going and getting and money and ROI and results and what can you do for me? And it's still real, right? Like no matter how human we are, no matter how human other people are. I had such a weird experience the other day, actually. I talked to the owner of a PR firm, great woman, liked her so much. And she wanted to refer me some clients for my TED Talk writing. And she wanted a massive cut. It was like, It was like more than I was making off of it. She would be making off of it. And it was so poignant for me to remember the corporate world. Yes, there's good touchy-feely vibes in the corporate world. There's people there that are great. And there's still this like weird shark thing that comes out amongst people.
Yeah.
Like this woman who I would be such good friends with, her business practices felt so abrasive to me. For me, I don't feel like I'm winning if I'm taking from someone in an unbalanced way. Something's not a mutual win. So for people who are starting to kind of go into their human, who am I? What lights me up? That's part one. How do they also communicate in a way where they're creating opportunities for themselves in the work world?
Yeah. One of the things that I learned early in my entrepreneurial career, because I was thinking, okay, how the hell am I going to do this? Somebody told me that, you know, in order for you to get more, you need to give away more. What the hell does that mean? And I started to see that when people were looking at career advancement, or I want to get on a board of directors, or I want to get this promotion, whatever it was, they were so focused on how they fit into the situation versus how they were going to help others grow alongside. So there was this kind of self-directed versus others-directed mentality that kind of struck me. It was like, oh, that's what they mean by that. It's not about, you know, you working with less.
Yeah.
It's you working with less of you and allowing more of others to be a part of. So it's building more culture around that. And I've noticed that I've worked with several women at Microsoft who have really struggled in director roles where they feel unheard, unseen, and that sort of thing. And the moment that they start to shift the focus away from why am I not feeling heard here into how can I help others be heard, all of a sudden she was heard or they were heard way more than before. And it's a subtle shift, but it's such an important shift, but we're not conditioned in the business world. We don't teach it. It's emotional intelligence that happens, you know, again, I'm thinking about, you know, we're raising two teenage kids. We don't teach emotional intelligence. It's all done by example, led by example, and we don't teach it in business. So it's those shifts that we start to look at. And that is what, again, when I talk about brand as an experience, that's your brand. It's not that you have a logo on your freaking business card or, you know, whatever it is. It's my experience with you is this. That's your brand. That's how people start to advance their careers.
I love that so much. And I feel like a lot of my friends who have podcasts, like they go viral because they're fun. And when you think about them, you can probably pick a few adjectives to describe them that really is the feel of their brand. So let's say somebody's listening right now. They're tuning into their inner human and they're like, you know, here's the things about me that light me up. Here are the things that are me. There's a lot of different things. How do we choose the story we tell? How do we start to narrow it down to be effective with it? And how do we choose how to put it out there? There's so many places we can go.
I think the first thing that comes to mind is once you start to really whittle out what, like going back to that analogy of lighting it up, who's your avatar? Who do you most want to serve on this planet? It's not enough just to be passionate about something or that you're really good at something. You need to be able to make sure that that gift identifies or connects with an audience that actually needs you. So part of it, that's where the business sense comes into it. You can have all of this incredible content and information and drive and desire and passion, but if you're not delivering it to an audience that needs it, there's going to be a disconnect from there on out. So I always say, okay, if you can find out what you're passionate about and what that more purposeful look at business looks like, okay, who are you serving now?
Mm-hmm.
They need. What are their biggest pain points? And oftentimes we focus so much on solution-based thinking that we forget about the pain. So I always say lead with the pain. Okay, great. You've got some passion. Now that next P is pain. What are the pain points that your audience are feeling? What are the kinds of things that you want to bring to the surface? And oftentimes developing the how and the what comes from connecting the passion and purpose that you have with the pain that your audience is needing to fix. So that's kind of a one thing to look at is kind of that purpose pain relationship. And once that comes to life, it's the age old, okay, how do they consume their information? Where are they at? What do they do? What are their lifestyles? Back in the day when I was doing branding for hospitality and master plan development and so forth, one of the things that I used to do is I would go sit in the local Starbucks next to wherever the property was going to be, and I would observe what's happening at Starbucks. Mm. Who's going there? What are they ordering? What are they reading? How are they interacting? Because the cross-section of your little metasphere in that area is going to be at Starbucks. And that's where everyone's the third place, right? It's not home, it's not work, it's the third place. Those are the kinds of things that you start to look for. Okay, what is the tribe that I'm actually serving? What do they need? That's where I'm going to be able to communicate with them. That's when you determine whether or not is social the right platform? Is email the right platform? Is public speaking the right platform? Is one-on-one FaceTime and getting out and whatever that looks like? That helps kind of determine whether or not the plan to connect with them makes sense. Does that kind of answer?
Yeah, no, I love this so much because it also kind of ties to something that I've really stood by, which is not, you opened up one piece of it, which is like, what is the pain point? What is the service you're offering? And I love this too, because, you know, the corporates who are listening, it's like, you can position yourself as a voice of influence in your space. And everybody's trying to start a business right now, as they should. There's so many reasons to start creating freedom for yourself. And to give your future self the gift of security. And I think a lot of that financial security can come from investing in a personal brand, putting your voice out there, because eventually you can amass an audience, whether it's small or large, and you can start to establish. So many people are like, I don't know what kind of business I want. I'm like, that's okay. Create a brand. And then eventually you'll know what to offer and you've got people ready to take it. But one piece that I've really focused on ever since publishing my book or having it get published was, how do we have you create a brand that not only meets your customers effectively, serves them in their pain points, but honors you, like not just your personality, but your skill set, right? Like I hate video. Like I did YouTube and you know, what's so funny. The YouTube guy was like, I have never seen someone so fast make a YouTube channel. I filmed my entire 50 videos of YouTube. They're like 7 to 10 minutes each in 2 days. And he was like, I have never seen so much content fly out of someone. This is your gift. I'm like, it's not my gift. It's that I want it to end. I am motivated for this to be over. There's something about a camera. I feel like, I don't know if it's maybe being a woman in a, you know, patriarchal culture where you kind of like are like, how do I look? Do I need Botox? I don't know. But I just don't like what video does to me. Maybe it makes me kind of dysmorphic. But I feel like everybody has a different skill set or gift or energy level that they get from different things. What are some of the platforms or how can we start to help people think about where they could get started? Because I feel like there's workplace people, entrepreneur people, side hustle people. They're listening and they're thinking, okay, cool. I'm a corporate lawyer and I want to give advice on how to do business and the legal side of it. Or maybe I'm a corporate lawyer, but I wish I was a musician. So maybe I can, you know, start a blog called like the musical lawyer. I don't know. Like, how do they start to choose where they create their little brand house on the internet and build from there?
So a couple of things come to mind, and this is always where I encourage people to start, because there's this tendency of personal branding to be owned by just me, right? I have to do it all on my own. This is my brand, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. Coming from a male in his, you know, late 40s, turning 50, asking for help is, you know, pulling teeth. This idea of being able to understand who you are from the outside in is so critical, because the more assumptions we make about ourselves, like you already made an assumption about video, right? Do I look this way, this or that, that sort of thing. I always say, find your own personal board of directors. It has to be at least three people. One is a close friend that you can trust, right? Another one could be a family member or an extended family member, an aunt, uncle, cousin, whatever it is. Third is a business consultant, someone that you've worked with in the past that knows you in a business capacity. Find a personal board of directors. Some people have three, some people have five, whatever it is, that you know that you can, on a monthly basis, connect with and say, hey, I'm having an issue, whatever it is, I need some help, that sort of thing. They know you from all different sides. They know how you communicate best. They know how they've connected with you in the past. They probably know you in that persona better than you know yourself. So I always say, be careful not to make any assumptions based on what you know to be true about yourself. Allow others to help see what your story is, because they're going to help tell your story for you by being able to understand the experiences that they have with you. That's really what personal brand is. It's creating those experiences with others that define who you are. So I always say, start there. And then I go back to that whole age old, okay, where are the people that I want to reach the most? Where am I going to make the most impact? That's the question I always ask. It's up where it's the most comfortable for me, right? Because the thing for you, it's funny you say that, Ashley, is what if your audience is 99.99% on YouTube consuming video all day long? Then it's crap. Then kind of forced to be where they're at. And maybe I need to find ways of, one, getting over that and making the awkwardness and the uncomfortableness actually a gift, or two, find ways to look at YouTube a little bit differently and see how that works. But I always go back to wherever your audience is, however they're consuming their information, that's where you need to be. Nowadays in the business world, LinkedIn's a must. So I would say start with something that's really easy to control, really easy to use, and everyone's there. Mm-hmm. So I would say start with LinkedIn. Nobody can mess it up. There's no right or whether. There are wrong ways to do it, but there are, I mean, it's so easy to kind of put together. And then you just start to look at what the metrics are saying. Do people like video? Are people sharing a lot of your posts? If you're, you know, I'm working with someone right now who's primarily working with working moms.
Yep.
They spend most of their time, okay? She's had great success on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Huge success, and specifically in the mom groups, right? The other thing she's looking at is all of the educational groups, PTAs, all of those places where they want to be, where they at, they want to be seen, they want to be involved, they want to be active. That's where she's spending her time. So it really is about, again, identifying where that tribe is and just making sure that they're there. But you cannot go wrong with LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You're a solopreneur, entrepreneur, build out a 3 to 5 page Squarespace Wix site. It is super cheap. It's super easy these days. Mm-hmm. I go back to 1991 when I was building a website with code and everything, college. And I'm like, how the hell did I ever do that? Yeah. It's all drag and drop. It's really easy to do. And it just allows you to have a place where you can start to build content and build your image and those experiences with others. That's where I start usually.
Yeah, I love this. And I also love the additional thought of, so you're looking at these platforms, and for everybody listening, just a little mind shift to even take this further that I'm sure Tucker would get into if we had forever hours. But the idea that you can go places where there's many people, for example, if you go on LinkedIn, it's like you can go live, you know, like I have 27,000 people on LinkedIn following me, but I don't really know what to do with it. So you're kind of like calling me out with even meaning to today, Tucker, which is good because I needed that. And it's funny too, because ever since I launched the TED Talk writing, people are like, oh, have you posted on LinkedIn about that? I'm like, no, I haven't. Yeah. But there's also the option of thinking even more differently where, you know, I speak to PR firms. So they have a roster of hundreds of clients that want my services.
Yeah.
And so there's also a way for you, instead of going to the consumers, to asking yourself, where's the party at? Who has a really long list of the customers I want to help? How can I provide value to them? Do you have any feedback on how to stand out when you're doing outreach? Because you just feel so like competent in this. And I feel like you're not I don't know. You feel different than like a PR person, not to minimize that. It's more just like, there's something very strategic about you that is so refreshing. And is there something that you would recommend as people are asking themselves these questions of like, where are my readers at? Where are my customers at? Where should I be showing up? And then the second piece of how do they reach out and get heard? Because we are in such a clusterfuck of a world with tweets or X or whatever.
I didn't even know that it happened.
And I know. I looked, me neither.
Saw the app on my phone. I went, oh my gosh, somebody put X rated. What is this?
I know. Like, I thought it was like porn on my phone. I literally thought. Oh my God.
Talk about branding nightmare.
What a doozy. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of things come to mind. One is I go back to in terms of, and you bring up a really good point that especially if you're in that entrepreneurial space or even in the business development space, is that we feel like we have to generate the stuff ourselves. And actually going back to that concept of asking for help, who are partners, affiliates that we can align ourselves that are not in competition with, but are complementary of? Where can I add value to somebody else's services? In fact, I've done that a lot, Ashley, on LinkedIn, where I've located people or we found one another where it's like, hey, you know what? You do this and I do this, kind of what you and I were talking about when we first started talking. Wouldn't it be great if we aligned on other things to meet something even bigger, better, brighter, that sort of thing? So that's one thing to do is to really look for, as you said, reach out to PR firms, look for others that can champion you
right
while you're championing them so that there's a win-win situation. And that's always a really great place to start.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Ancillary relationships. It's funny because career coaching, when I used to think about speaking early in my career, like 15 years ago, I was like, I need to speak at career seminars. And it's no. I can go speak at a yoga seminar and there's people there that are probably going to yoga to get some space from their careers. So it's like really thinking outside the box of who are people that could be giving you referrals that are not in competition with you, but in complement to you. So sorry to interrupt you. Driving that home, carry on. This is so good.
Yeah, no. I think the second thing that I was going to add to that, and you said, how do you reach them? Finding the right people nowadays, especially through LinkedIn, is pretty easy. I mean, you can search geography, company, title, you know, skill set. I mean, we've been able to kind of days of sifting through 1,000 resumes is over with, but it really is a phenomenal search engine. The hard part is then, as you said, standing out. So one of the two things that I've learned, one is it's never about you. It's always about them. In fact, I was working with a younger kid, he's mid 20s, and his whole platform is helping a million teens go from socially anxious to socially confident. He grew up with social anxiety, he's suffered with it daily. He's now kind of conquering it, but he was focused so much on himself that he wasn't focusing on how he was going to help others in that same situation. So it was flipping his story into our story and reaching out to organizations, national organizations. I love what you're doing. I would love to see how I can help you. Not once say, I want to speak with your organization. I'm looking for a job, whatever it is. I want to help your mission. Mm. And that being of service to others got him into so many more doors. Now to a point where he's now an affiliate field reporter in Chicago for social anxiety because it's such a hot topic. They go to him because it was all about making it about them and not him. So there's kind of, again, it's in order to keep it, we give it away concept.
Right.
That's the first thing. The second thing is dare to be vulnerably courageous. And I say that in the sense that word vulnerability gets tossed around a lot. We're so accustomed to hearing business-like language that we've commoditized it. We've become immune to it. We've liquidated. I mean, it's all of that. Your story and your experience of what you've had through your life is the most important business development tool that we have.
Right.
So I had an opportunity to speak at Microsoft a few years ago, and the night before I changed my talk altogether because I felt like it felt canned, it felt coined, it felt boilerplate, it felt very predictable.
Mm.
And I got up on the stage the next day and I looked at probably, I don't know, 1,500 women in the audience. They were all in technology. And I said, if you don't feel like you have the power to be yourself, to be vulnerable, to be seen or tell your story, you're not working in the right place. And there was like a pin drop. And then I got up there and I said, if you saw me 7 years ago when I turned 40, you wouldn't recognize me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very honest. And I said, I had almost lost everything. I was drinking too much. I was living in a hotel. I didn't know where my family was going to be in the next few days. I wasn't sure where my career was going. I was done. silence again. And I tell that story to say that we can come back from pretty much anything, but being able to relate on the basis of story opens up so many more doors. I had more people come and talk to me after a complete vulnerable, you know, verbal diarrhea of my story that a lot of people would say, why the hell would you do that? I had more connections made out of that story than any other talk I'd ever given.
Wow.
It was only because they said, finally, a business talk that wasn't about business.
Right.
Because again, going back to that human emotion, we connect on human emotion first and logic second. So I always say, don't be afraid to use some of that vulnerable courage, that storytelling to be able to drive business development. Because at the end of the day, stories create trust, they create confidence, they create relatability, and that's what people want. They want to be sold to.
I love that so much. And I feel like sometimes as a storyteller myself, I get sick of my own story. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm on the hundredth podcast. I'm like, how do I make this interesting for myself? I can't tell the same story about, you know, whatever the thing is. But I guess your story is your story. And kind of going back to my original question of we are so many things, and you were talking about coming back to the human in you, what lights you up. How do people pick these moments to craft their story? You know, when I write a TED Talk, I like to know what moments stand out in someone's history in their life timeline as highly relevant. And I like to start there. But how does someone in, especially in like workspaces like banking or something, it's like people are so thirsty in the banking world for like stories and connection. And there's not always a lot of that. You know, let's say somebody's interviewing for a job or they want to bring on a bank as a client or something like that. It's like, how do they find that professional self where they can tell a story, open up some soul, kind of intentionally share what they're going to share? What would be a start for someone or an exercise for someone to do to start to kind of uncover where to go with their story arc of themselves and not make it like a TED Talk where it's like a long breath in and they're like leaning in like my grandpa before he tells a story. It's, whoa, we're going to be here a while.
I think we can all relate to that on some level. It sounds a little bit cliche-ish, but at the same time, Simon Sinek was on to something really big that people buy on why you do it, not what you do, right? And I always say that if the stories that you're telling are trying to sell somebody else on why they should be doing it, do a gut check. Tell stories on why you do what you do, because they can actually relate more to your why than trying to convince somebody else of what their why is. That's what's being sold to, right? So I always say, look for stories specifically, you know, and, you know, I talk about this all the time about why I love storytelling is at the end of the day, what saved my life was storytelling, was actually sharing where I'd been in order to help other people get out of where they were at. That became my why.
Yeah.
I translated that personal recovery of how I helped myself into a business model.
Yeah.
Same kind of a thing. So if you think about the stories that help illustrate your why, and the and why you do what you do or why you do what you love, those to me are the stories that are going to matter the most, because those are the ones that people relate to and see it. That's why he is so passionate about what he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than me trying to convince Ashley to go do something because I think it would be good for you.
Yeah.
They have to come to that conclusion. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's, if you want to have power over anybody or influence over anybody, the last thing you want to do is convince. Like that's the most, one of the most low power moves you can do. Yeah, there's so much that you're sharing for everybody to reflect on. Is there something I haven't asked you that would be useful for everyone to know before we go? Because you're just full of so much strategy, and I really enjoy being around that because I'm pretty into that kind of stuff, like more tactical, less flowers, more tactics, like yes, please. Yeah. So do you have any other tactical things for people to think about before we go? I know you have 1,000.
Well, the only thing I would say as it relates to this is I'm always forthcoming. I never thought I would say this. And if my dad heard me saying this, he would probably kill. I hate sales.
Yeah.
I cannot stand sales. And for a long time, people associated marketing and communications and branding with sales. And I'm like, not going to happen. And I told myself there's got to be a way to do what I love to do and never have to sell anything ever again. And my whole thing is if you tell the right stories, if you make the right connections, if you are in service of others,
the relationship is the marketing tool. It's not the product that you're selling. So you will never have to sell again if you understand how to tell a really good story and relate to the people that you're trying to support. Mm. And that has made all the difference. Mm. I go in with the idea that I have to sell someone something.
Ugh, yeah.
I panic. I go in, I can't do this. Like the imposter, all that kind of stuff. Be focused on the story and how you can be of service to others, and you will never have to sell a thing again. I know that sounds very lofty, but it has worked for the last 10 years. And I absolutely love that concept. That was one thing that I get a lot is, how do you sell? Right. You know, I'm like, don't look at me because I hate sales. But what I'm really good at doing is allowing storytelling to be a business development tool.
Mm, okay. So final question for everyone. Yeah. What is one of your favorite client stories of start to finish, like the transformation? I find like I've taken on clients who are kind of an edge, and they're some of my favorite stories. Like one woman was like, her husband was kind of a big celebrity and she was a doctor, but she wanted to become like a wellness personality. And I was such an edge for me to take her on. And now she's like flying. So it feels fun to kind of see these, but is there a transformation that you think we could relate to or maybe just enjoy listening to?
This one, not a lot of people can relate to it, but they enjoy it. And because it's probably something you're not expecting to hear.
Yeah.
I've spent probably close to 300 hours inside prison.
Oh my gosh.
Not because of myself and my wrongdoing, but I was actually part of a team that helped bring TEDx inside prisons.
Wow.
And so I was fortunate enough that for several years, I was teaching, educating, coaching lifers on storytelling, conflict resolution. I will never forget the first day that I walked into the prison yard, and Shaky, I'll never forget his name, Shaky, because he had a shake when he shook your hand. He said, Tucker, when you walk into prison, they strip you of everything and they fill you with nothing. So it's up to you to decide what you're going to fill yourself with. So I spent a lot of time working with, I mean, these are convicted, you know, murderers. I mean, these are people that are never going to see the life outside of walls again.
Yeah.
To watch them transform through the power of their own voice, through their own stories, being vulnerable enough to say, I didn't have a father figure, or I got, you know, the gangs were my brotherhood, so I just followed what they did, or I've never had confidence in myself to be able to you know, show up, you know, as anyone else but the villain, right? To watch them transform and to be able to get up there with tears in their eyes, denounce their gang, change their life, you know, try to get years taken off of parole, whatever it is, to be able to see somebody transform from probably the worst they've ever been into the best that they felt in their entire life, knowing that they're still behind bars, was incredibly, incredibly rewarding. And the number one thing that they all said, if they had one thing that they would do on the outside, they all said the same thing. Mm-hmm. Side of hugging a family member, they would want to work with kids to make sure that they never ended up in the same situation.
There is something to process.
It came back to service. Yeah. It came to service.
Yeah.
So we say that whole concept of giving back to others, that was the big lesson learned. I'm like, if it's happening inside the depths of prison, then there's something about humanity that there's you know, a
and
lesson.
To take that further, you cannot give back as effectively if you can't tell your damn story. Like, you need, people need to be able to understand how you can help and connect to you in a sea of people to trust you to help them. I think storytelling is a way that people process their life and help people process how they can show up in their lives. So I just think you are so much fun to have on, and
I had a blast.
Yeah, your expertise really shows, you know, like I've interviewed a lot of people about brand, and sometimes it's a little, not to like rank, it's more just like, sometimes it's a little bit like, yeah, you know, this is how you do outreach and get some PR and da da da, versus like really thinking strategically about how you're going to relay a message. And I'm really excited for people listening. I hope this lights a fire under you to like get started. And just like side note, I keep bringing up, I don't know if it's present because you and I talked about this offline originally, like with my TEDx. Going from career coaching and helping people make pivots and being an author and a writer, it doesn't sound like too far of a shot from speech writing. Like I've been a content creator, but It's the first time I've ever offered something that's a high-end investment outside of like my speaking fee.
Yeah.
And it has been so much more effortless to fill this than I ever thought. And I haven't done one sale. I haven't even asked to sell it to anyone. It's all I'm doing is getting in touch with people, letting them know what I'm up to. And the way that I relay it, they're sending so many people my way. And I feel as I make an impact on those people, they're going to get out there and share the impact. And your customers, your clients, if you tell the right stories, you attract the right people, they will be your sales force for you. And yeah, there's just so much to say. Where can everybody find you, learn from you? Who should be hiring you to help them with this in particular? I know that we both hate sales. So tell us like—
I don't do sales, but I create impact. That's the only way I look at it. You know, it's a wide variety. I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, authors, a lot of nonprofit startups, smaller organizations that are looking to kind of define what their bigger vision is. You know, I work with other keynote speakers, influencers, a lot of the functional health space, a lot of medical doctors and so forth, all the way down to educators to, I mean, honestly, there isn't anyone I would not work with as long as they're, you know, they're in alignment with being of service to others and using personal brand to be effective and not to sell themselves. Mm. But it really is all about someone who's willing to invest in themselves first in order to create the greatest impact. And yeah, my website, TuckerStine, STINE.com. It's the STINE that throws people. It's not the STEIN that most people think when they hear it. So TuckerSTINE.com. There's plenty of stuff there, information there, and happy to support anyone that I can. And I look forward to, Ashley, you and I finding ways of creating some really cool, impactful collaborations, because there's a lot to be had out there. And I think there's stuff waiting.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. People always come to me as a writer and they're like, you should write a book about this, like the 12 business connections for a fulfilling life. And I'm like, I do want to write about these things, but nothing calls me enough to really clear out my year and sit down with the blank page. But when I listen to you, I'm like, we should write a book about branding. And then I'm like, yeah,
there you go.
You know, maybe just this conversation. But thank you so much again for being here, everybody. I hope you head on over to his site. Really cool work, and sending you lots of love.
Thank you so much for tuning into the U-Turn podcast. And thank you again so much for our sponsors. We are here because of you. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out our sponsors. We always pick people and brands that we trust and we believe in. And just for listening to the show, writing your reviews on the Apple app, and just being willing to make your own U-turns. We'll see you next week.